Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have on Temple of Health today Dr. Kelly Turner, who is the author of Radical Remission, The 9 Key Factors That Can Make a Real Difference, Surviving Cancer Against All Odds. Kelly has been studying cancer for some time now and became intrigued by the stories of remission, especially when not associated with traditional treatments such as chemotherapy and radiation, and she went on a mission to find out what these patients had in common. She correctly observed that nobody was looking at them, and a lot of times their doctors were ignoring them and even asking them to not talk with other patients, which is, we'll talk about that a little bit. And so out of that investigation came Radical Remission, and it is an important book for anybody who has cancer or a loved one with cancer or just wants to know how to avoid cancer. Thanks, Dr. Turner, for joining us.
Oh, sure. My pleasure, Susan. Happy to be here.
So tell us, Kelly, tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get involved in studying these issues?
Well, after I graduated from Harvard undergrad, I was sort of drawn to work with cancer patients just because, like most people in this country, I've lost loved ones to cancer. And so I was just getting my master's degree in counseling, and that was my plan, and that's what I did, and I was enjoying it very much. So I was just, you know, being a psychotherapist, helping cancer patients. I was working at a major hospital, cancer hospital in San Francisco, and life was great. But, you know, I was helping people. I felt like I was making a difference. But then I came across a case of radical remission, and it just sort of stopped me in my tracks. And I said, did this really happen? I mean, this was a story of a man with stage 4 kidney cancer sent home on hospice in a wheelchair and on a feeding tube. And according to the book I was reading, he was alive 20 years later. And I said to myself, why wasn't this front page news? And so I started doing some research, because obviously I'd been trained in research at Harvard, and I quickly found that there were over 1,000 of these cases in medical journals, and yet I'd never heard of any one of them. And so that just sort of, that's what sparked it, and I ended up going back for my PhD at UC Berkeley, and I've spent 10 years and investigated 10 countries and 1,000 cases, and just trying to get to the bottom of these people who everyone else is really ignoring simply because they can't explain them. And, of course, as a researcher, that's not the responsible thing to do, right? Just because you can't explain something doesn't mean you shouldn't look into it.
And as you look into it, you have to keep an open mind, too, because you can't go in with preconceived notions, or that kind of skews your observations.
Well, exactly. You know, a lot of people, the kind of research I do is called qualitative research. It's also the research that's done in anthropology. And I've had a few oncologists, you know, come at me and say, well, that's not research. You know, you're raising false hope. And I have to step back and remind them and bring them back to their first research class, which is the first step of the scientific method is actually observation. The second step is developing a hypothesis. So when they are faced with someone in their practice who's healed from cancer in ways that they can't explain because they did it without chemo or surgery or radiation, the first step is to observe, and the second step is to come up with a hypothesis, and that's what qualitative research accomplishes. And exactly, you're exactly right, Susan, you can't go in with preconceived hypotheses, especially when you don't know what's happening. The whole point is to go in and observe and let the explanations come from the ground up, so come from, you know, that group of people that you're investigating who are so unusual, right? So just like an anthropologist would go into the Amazon jungle and find a new tribe, and they wouldn't start asking them, well, what's your favorite food, right? They would just simply observe for a while and learn the language and let the people talk to them. And that's what I did. You know, I've interviewed over 200 people directly now, and I've analyzed over 1,000 cases, written cases. And when I'm doing my in-depth interviews, which often last, you know, between 2 and 3 hours, I just ask one question, and that's, tell me everything that you think helped you heal. And then I just shut up, because that's what a good qualitative researcher needs to do.
That's great. Well, we've had a cancer center here since 1999, and we help people with exactly what is in your book, each one of the categories, including the spiritual aspect. And basically, I can tell you from from working with hundreds of cancer patients that the majority of my cancer patients not only know what they need to do intuitively, but they also, when they think about it, actually know what caused the cancer. And that's what I loved about your book. You started out, okay, well, what caused this cancer? And then work from there. Because different things are different. Cancer is not just one thing. It's like one patient may have cancer because they were in Chernobyl right after the nuclear accident, but another patient may have cancer, breast cancer, because her husband cheated on her. You know, it's very, very different causes. And treating the cause is extremely important.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, for any illness, figuring out the root cause is, of course, going to be the key. You know, scientifically, the reason why cancer is still a mystery after 60 years of this war on cancer is because it can be caused by so many different things. We know, you know, it's verified that cancer has been linked to viruses, bacteria, toxins, radiation, but also cellular breakdown and genetic mutation. And especially cellular breakdown can be caused by severe trauma and severe stress over time. So, you know, I had some people, and I would always end my interviews by saying, well, thank you for telling me everything that you did to help heal. Do you have any thoughts at all as to what might cause cancer or what might have caused your cancer?
Right.
And, you know, some people said it was the pesticides on their lawn, and other people said it was the death of their father. And, you know, we're not at a point scientifically to be able to prove that. But it was interesting to hear the range of answers that came up from the people I studied.
And I think it was a very important question to ask. I think utilizing the patient's intuition and especially their deepest thoughts and fears and hopes is at the very core of this research. It is extremely important. If somebody has an inordinate fear of dying from cancer, that's something you need to know. It really is. Because then you have to work on the fear of death. And in your book you do. You mention that specifically because that's a big one.
That is a big one. And I'm always quick to say that my research is not telling people what they should do. My research is simply explaining what radical remission survivors do. So the nine key factors are simply the nine most common factors that this group of people had in common. So again, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a researcher. First of all, I'm a PhD. So I'm not in the arena of
treating
a nice,
business.
Yeah, right. As much as you are, Susan, which is I'm so happy to give that job to you. But I can say, so we don't know if you do these nine things. We can't promise scientifically that if you do them, you'll cure your cancer. What we can say is that radical remission survivors, these are the nine most common things that they have in common, because they did much more than nine things. You know, the people that I studied, you know, taken as a whole, I found more than 75 different things that they were doing to try to get well, but not everyone did all 75. However, everyone that I studied did at least eight, if not all nine, of these most frequent factors.
And I tell my patients, I tell my patients the most important thing is that they get in touch and follow their intuition, because it's their intuition that's going to lead them to the most important eight or nine things.
Wow. And you're a rare doctor to say that. intuition coming up was a surprise for me. You know, obviously I was going in as a qualitative researcher, so I went in without any hypotheses. But we're all human, and we go in with, you know, secret expectations. And so I sort of thought that intuition would come up occasionally, following your intuition.
Right.
But I didn't expect it to come up in every single interview, but it did.
It's so important.
That's why it's one of the most nine most common factors from my research. And just to tell your listeners a bit more about what this factor means, I call it in the book Following Your Intuition. And it's using that little internal voice, or for some people it's not little, it's loud, to help make your healing decisions. So you don't necessarily need to listen to it blindly, but just like you would ask the opinion of your doctor and perhaps your family and your spiritual teacher, you also want to ask your intuition to weigh in. At least the people I talked to, that's what they did. And just to give you an example, the woman that I feature in the intuition chapter is named Susan, and that's her real name. She gave me permission to use her real name. She was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer with very little warning. She'd kind of had a cough for a year and a half, and they finally figured out that it was pancreatic cancer that had spread to her lungs. And so she found that out in one day. Mm-hmm. And she was on the the doctor's table when they told her, and the doctor said, "You have to have chemotherapy immediately. This is very serious. You're going to be dead in 6 months if you don't, you know, start chemo tomorrow." And she had never heard any sort of voices in her head ever before. She told me, mm-hmm. she goes, "You're going to think I'm crazy, but I heard a voice in my head." And the voice said to me, "Not that way, not this time." Mm-hmm. And that was her intuition. Now, other, you know, I also study people who have followed Western medicine to its fullest and tried everything their doctors offered. So I'm certainly mm-hmm. not against Western medicine whatsoever. But what was interesting about Susan is that her intuition was saying, don't do the Western medicine right away. Start with something else. And for her, mm-hmm. her intuition told her to start with diet, and then it led her into energy medicine, acupuncture meridians, and then right. a very interesting form of energy medicine called matrix energetics, which you mm-hmm. may or may not be familiar with, Susan.
I interviewed the creator of that.
I've
interviewed many things. Patty Conklin, I think, is on next week. Yeah. Patty used to be associated with me. She was in my clinic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Patty was... I interviewed Patty for over an hour for my book. Patty Conklin is intuitive healer based in Georgia. So I'm sure you know her well and have had her on.
I did.
Yeah, the intuition thing is interesting because, you know, as a Harvard trained researcher, when I was writing the book, I said, well, what science do we have behind intuition? Do we have any? You know, what studies have mm-hmm. been done on intuition? Well, there have not been tons. But the few that have been done are really fascinating to me, and I'll just describe one, for example. So intuition comes from the back part of our brain. Who knows where it actually comes from, but it's transmitted mm-hmm. from the base of our brain, the reptilian part of our brain. And mm-hmm. that part of our brain is not a part of our brain that we have to use. Many of us, fortunately, don't have to use it very much because it's the part of your brain that we used when we were hunters and gatherers. And so it is instinctual. It's immediate. Mm-hmm. It tells us there's a tiger over there or there's a hurricane coming. Pack up your whole tent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for many Americans who, you know, aren't in mortal danger every day, thank God, they're not using that part of their brain. But when a doctor tells you, you have cancer, in our society, those words are a mortal threat. And so that part of your brain, if we were to have cancer patients under an fMRI machine when they got their diagnosis, we would likely see that back part of their brain light up. And that's mm-hmm. why Susan, who had never heard voices before, mm-hmm. heard the voice that day. And it's because she suddenly felt like she was in mortal danger. And that's when that part of your brain kicks in and says, go here, do this, try this.
Right.
And for some people, it said, change your diet. And for other people mm-hmm. I interviewed, it said, change your marriage.
Right. And that's very true, because not everybody has a horrible diet. Not everybody is extremely acidic. But if you have a horrible diet, or if you are extremely acidic and you have cancer in your body, you best change those two things if you don't want that cancer out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have different things going on.
Yeah, a phrase that one of the alternative healers that I interviewed said during my travels, and it's really stuck with me, is he said, every person has a different change they need to make.
Right.
And, of course, Western scientists don't like to hear that. We're looking for one cure for all of cancer. And, hey, that would be great. I really would love that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that cancer is, you know, a cellular breakdown that can happen for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so if it can be caused by a variety of reasons, it makes sense that it might be healed by a variety of solutions.
Yeah. Would you like to hear my theory of cancer?
I would love to.
After years of observation, yeah.
Yes, please.
I believe cancer is one of three diseases that is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension. The first is schizophrenia. It's pretty well known. Antipsychotics are used to treat it. The second is Morgellons. I don't know if you've heard of Morgellons, but I showed the CDC their first case of Morgellons. And Morgellons is a very interesting disease. It has a lot of aspects to it that do not appear to even belong in the third dimension. If you study the disease and you talk to the people, you understand they're living in a highly psychotic type world with a very, very deadly disease. But in any case, I had a large number of patients with Morgellons. And then the third disease is cancer. And the reason I think it's a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension is because I believe cancer occurs when an organ loses energy, and it's a specific organ, like it would be the blood system with leukemia, the lymphatic system with lymphoma, or whatever organ you're talking about. But there's a precipitous drop in energy in the organ, and that could be caused by exposure to radiation, carcinogens, chemicals, toxic emotions. For example, we know that if a woman's right-handed and someone who's supposed to be protecting her betrays her, the left breast energy drops precipitously. So there's many different things that will lower the vibrational energy in the organ. But when that happens, and if it gets low enough, and this information comes out of the more the metaphysical side of things, where we're talking about vibrational rates, then we believe, according to shamans that I've worked with, that energy that is kind of a mindless eater, that's how the shamans describe it, go into the organ and manifest as tumors. And then later on, those things go out and have babies and become metastatic disease. So it's an energy, not from this dimension, but intruding into this dimension. And I'll give you two examples of why I think this is. You've heard of spontaneous remission, I'm sure. Spontaneous remission.
Study. Yeah.
Yeah, spontaneous remission, and I've observed this, is when an energy starts at the crown and goes to the feet in the patient. They feel an energy go through their body, but from the time it only takes like a minute to do that, but all metastatic disease is gone by the time it hits their feet. It's gone. It's not there. You send them over, there's no evidence of metastatic disease anywhere in their body. The tumors actually literally dissolve in a minute. Okay, now, how can that be possible if the cause of cancer is only in the third dimension? And then the other thing that would have to be explained in order to explain the cause of cancer would be generational curses. And, there's books written on generational curses of cancer. And anything, the shamans tell me that anything that is a curse is by definition a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension. So, although we've been studying cells and genetics and getting smaller and smaller, the small voice in my head, the intuitive voice that I listen to, always told me that we had to look in the other direction. We had to look multidimensionally to find the cause of cancer.
And so how do you treat that?
Well, I've sent you an email on that. And it's not something that I want to get into today because we're discussing your book, but certainly we can talk about it later after you read the email. I put some scientific studies in there for you as well on the effectiveness of this treatment.
Wow.
But you can treat it. Well, the short answer is you can treat it with anything that closes the portal. And in my experience, have you run into patients that went to shamans? I know that there, and we can talk about it later, John Agard is in here, who I've met and I know quite a bit about. But shamans have spontaneous cures of cancer. Not always spontaneous. Sometimes it takes a little bit more time. But the shamans tell me that they do it by closing the portal. Because I asked them, I was seeing them cure cancer, and I said, why are you doing this? And they said, oh, we just closed the portal.
Huh. Well, I have interviewed a few shamans for my work. I interview any healers that radical remission survivors go to see. So I interviewed because their cancer patients had gone to see her and had gotten well from her. So I have interviewed a few shamans. they've never described it in quite those words about the fourth, you know, portal and the fourth dimension, third dimension. But you know, but that doesn't mean you know.
You might want to ask them again.
Yeah, maybe I didn't ask the right question.
Because maybe they felt that was outside of your, you know, your investigation.
Understanding. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the way that a lot of the shamans and alternative healers that I interviewed described it in terms of their healing, they said, first of all, the patient had to, you know, be a willing participant. The patient had to allow them to sort of mess with or correct the energy field. So the first step is permission. Once the patient agreed and was a willing participant, then the shaman's job was simply to, like you said, give energy back to the places in the body where it had the chi had gone away, the prana had gone away. And
by the way, that's very important. Energetic healing, actually laying on the hands and other acupuncture, anything that will raise the energy in the tissue is critical, because remember what I said before, the critter that is entering in, that manifests the tumor, will not stay there unless it's low energy. I mean, that spontaneous remission where a high fifth dimensional energy goes through the body and kicks the fourth dimension out, you know, the fourth dimensional energy out, that is, it does it by raising the energy in the tissue.
Right, right, and that's the beautiful, wonderful theory of these alternative medicine healers. One of them put it in words that I could understand, which was talking about it as if it were water. So he said to me, water can take three forms, right? It can be ice, it can be water, it can be steam. He said, think of cancer as ice. You know, it's this block, it's this tumor, it's this mass. He said, you know, if you do certain things to it, if you put water on it, it will slowly melt away. He goes, but if a shaman comes in, and if you give permission for that shaman to come in and pour steam on it, it's gonna melt really, really quickly.
Exactly.
And what you're doing is you're taking, you know, you're taking higher vibrational energy and pouring it onto something that's lower vibration, and you're then moving it from a solid back to, you know, and of course we're getting a little too metaphorical with our, too literal with our metaphor, but that was a nice visual that I had for understanding, because I was interviewing Reiki practitioners, acupuncturists, Qigong practitioners, and even people like Patty Conklin, who are, you know, just transmitting energy somehow, are going in there and bringing light in, or as you say, you know, closing some portal. I'm not quite sure what they're doing, but this image of bringing ice, a block of ice that's this mass, and then moving it to steam so that it goes away. That was a nice way for me to understand what these energy healers said they were doing.
Well, I've worked with many energy healers, including Patty and other ones, and actually I do laying on the hands myself. And the majority of cancer patients, if you do a prolonged session where you directly put energy into the area and measure the tumor before and after, say a breast tumor where you can measure it, you will see the tumor shrink, usually by about 20%, almost in every case. So that is direct evidence that increasing the energy in the area of the tumor can have an effect on the physical size of the tumor. Now, I'm not saying the tumor's dissolving. It might just be increasing the, you know, the lymphatic supply so the tumor's less swollen. We don't know the exact mechanism. But think about this. Actually, closing the portal, which is different, by the way, than putting energy in. The shamans do something very different when they close the portal. Closing the portal is actually going more toward the higher cause that all cancers would have in common. You see the difference there?
Yeah.
And then that way, it could be more precisely used to treat larger number of people with more scientific results. That's my belief, anyway. Because when you get down to the organ level, there's so many different organs in the body, so many different causes that can decrease energy in these organs, so many different, even genetic causes. We know that genetic causes are there as well, that it's really hard to come up with one thing that, or even a number of things that will help all cancer patients.
Absolutely. I agree. That's probably why there were 9 things, not just one in my,
research. Well, why don't you go ahead and list the 9 things since we've been talking about them? You want to let the audience know that?
And we can talk about any of the ones that you'd like to talk about. We've already talked about following your intuition, of course. But the 2 of them were physical. And again, these are the 9 most common factors that radical remission survivors had in common. So the 2 physical ones were radically changing your diet and taking herbs and supplements. Mm-hmm. And then the other 7 were emotional and spiritual shifts. So we talked about following your intuition. Another big one was taking control of your health. So really making sure that you were active in the changes you were making and not being passively controlled by others.
Right.
Another one was releasing suppressed emotions, any emotion that you're holding onto in the body. That was a big one. Another one was increasing positive emotions. So not trying to force yourself to be happy all the time. They were actually very clear not to do that. but they said to try to have, you know, at least 5 minutes a day of laughter and pure joy or happiness. However you could try to muster that. Another one was embracing social support. So allowing yourself to receive love from others and feel connection and community. Then, of course, deepening your spiritual connection, which I'm sure we could talk about that because that was the chapter in which I talk about John of God. And then last but definitely not least was having strong reasons for living. Now, that's different than trying to avoid death because trying to avoid or, being afraid of dying is, of course, a fear. Having strong reasons for living is a love. It's a passion. It's something that brings chi into your body.
Correct. And for everybody, the spiritual aspect is one that they're going to have to go within to do. I mean, it's not one formula for everybody. It's kind of like your intuition.
Right. In terms of my finding of deepening your spiritual connection, you know, I study people from all different religions and from many people without any, organized religion. But the commonality remained, which was having a practice, a daily practice, that connects you to a deeper energy. So for some people who weren't part of an organized religion, that was walking in nature in silence every day. Mm-hmm. For other people, it was meditation, and for others, it was prayer. You know, I even met some people who were whirling dervishes and spun around. So whatever practice that you do that is going to get your body into a state where you are connected to a deeper energy, that's what the people I studied were doing on a daily basis. And they considered it as important as eating your vegetables or, brushing your teeth. And what I love about this idea of spiritual connection practice, as opposed to, you know, having a belief in something, this is actually a practice. This is something you do to your mind and body. And what we know from the scientific studies that have been done, especially on meditation, is that when you do whatever practice you're doing, there are concrete physiological changes that are very health promoting. So your breathing slows down. So you're having nice long deep breaths. Your blood pressure goes down. Your oxygen goes up. Your stress response turns off. And your repair response, which is your immune system, turns on. So things like cortisol go down, and things like serotonin and relaxin and oxytocin, they actually start being secreted from the master glands in your brain. They flood your bloodstream, and they tell your immune cells to get to work.
Right.
And so now we're suddenly taking, you know, a quote-unquote spiritual, non-scientific idea, and we're realizing that it has concrete scientific results on the body in a way that's going to help your body fight cancer. And that's what I love, because if you just say, oh, he went to John of God and he was healed, it remains a mystery. But if you can break it down, then you can say, no, we have the power to connect to something that's going to help our bodies heal.
There's actually a drug that we are using in low doses called low-dose naltrexone. Have you heard of that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a wonderful doctor in New Mexico who's using that.
Well, low-dose naltrexone has a great many uses, mainly in autoimmune, immune illnesses. Any illness where your immune system isn't working as well as it could, which includes cancer. But it works through a similar mechanism. It works by increasing endorphins. It's a small dose of a narcotic antagonist, and we've seen quite great benefits from it. But this, you know, your spiritual practice would just be a natural way to do this rather than, you know, do it through a drug. It would be you know, more natural. And Qigong is absolutely fabulous in terms of its track record in being a spiritual practice, mainly because anybody can do it. Meditation, not everybody can do, as you know. Meditation is challenging and very frustrating for some people, but most everybody can do Qigong.
Right, and for your listeners who might not know, although I'm sure all your listeners know what it is, but you know,
they don't all know.
It's the energetic movement practice. Tai Chi is a form of Qigong, so a lot of people, they see the people performing Tai Chi in the mornings in the park. That's a form of Qigong, and it's a beautiful combination of breathing and movement and really getting your brain into a theta wave, right? That the theta wave pattern that babies are in almost all the time is a very healing state for your nervous system to be in. And Tai Chi and Qigong are wonderful ways to get you into it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you'd like me to share a story about a spiritual connection practice, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
I always learn best by hearing about stories. So, well, Matthew is the feature story of the spirituality chapter, and what I like about Matthew is that he didn't have a spiritual practice before cancer. He was the closest he came to God, he said, was just going for walks in nature. But he was just your average, normal, you know, American kid who was 26, a couple years out of college, and working out in Colorado and trying to, you know, put together two jobs to pay his bills and everything. But he was diagnosed after 2 weeks of debilitating headaches. He was diagnosed with stage 4 glioblastoma, which is, as you know, Susan, a very serious prognosis. And it's a brain tumor that's very fast-growing, and we currently in Western medicine don't have very good treatment for it. So his was located in the very center of his brain, so they were unable to operate, and their only treatment option was radiation, which they gave him, and they actually gave him the maximum amount of radiation that's allowed for a human being in a lifetime. But it still didn't work. By the time they finished that radiation, his brain tumor was still growing. He tried chemotherapy, but it made him so violently ill that he couldn't do it. And so his doctors, which were, you know, they were at a very, very well-respected cancer hospital here on the East Coast, they said when the radiation was finished, you know, we're so sorry, there's nothing more we can do. It's time to go put your affairs in order. But Matthew is such a funny, he's such a wonderful, wonderful man. But his doctor basically said, you have, you know, a 1% chance of survival here. And Matthew said, well, I'm going to be that 1%. Thank you very much.
Right.
He actually said to the doctor, F you, I'm going to be that 1%.
Right.
Because he was, you know, at this point he was 26. He had no intention of going anywhere. And he had a lot of reasons to keep living. He really was not wanting to give up the body just yet. And so that allowed him to be very open-minded when friends and family started coming in and saying, well, if you're out of options, you might want to try this healer that I heard of. And long story short, he got sort of led to John of God in Brazil, who's an energy healer down there, and went down there thinking, this is crazy, but what have I got to lose? And on his first night there, before he even saw John of God, so he got there and he checked into the hotel and he was set to see John of God the next morning. Well, at 3 a.m. in the morning, he woke up and there was this light on in the bathroom, and he didn't remember leaving the light on, so he thought that was weird. And when he got up to go turn it off, this being of light, he had a vision of a being of light come out of the bathroom, and this sort of female energy of light just silently came up to him and put her hand on his head. And as soon as she did, he felt this, like, waterfall of the most blissful, perfected light start flooding through his body. And that might be what you were talking about how shamans
it
come
is.
In. And,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, and
yeah.
He felt it go from the top of his head all the way down like a trickle of perfection,
right.
He said. And he didn't want to leave that feeling. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, she took her hand off and then it went away and then she sort of disappeared. But
right.
It shook him so much. He'd never had anything like this before. And for him, that was a sign that something was going to happen in this place.
He was in the right place.
He was in the right place, exactly.
That's right, yeah.
So he ended up staying there for 2 years. John of God said, I can help you, but you have to stay here.
Right.
And Matthew ended up meditating 3 days a week for 2 years. And that's pretty extreme. I always like to tell listeners, I interviewed plenty of other people who didn't have to move to Brazil and meditate 3 days a week. But he did embark on this spiritual connection practice that is now,
right.
Of course, a part of his life. But 2 years later, John of God said, okay, go to the doctors. You're fine now. And he said, go to the doctors because I want you to have an MRI because having proof of your healing is going to be very important for this world.
Right.
And so he went and got an MRI, and it was completely clear. He
right.
To this day,
he did
now,
it.
I think more
that's
than,
right.
He did it. Yeah, more than
he
7 years
it.
Later,
yeah.
He's clear, and he fell in love with a Brazilian woman, and they're expecting their second child. So, you know, when you hear stories like this, my first instinct is, did that really happen? But then, I can't leave it there. So I found Matthew. I verified his case. I spoke to him in person. I saw his beautiful face, and it's true. These things happen.
Yeah, John of God has hundreds of stories like that, though. I mean, they have... now, not everybody that goes to John of God is cured.
Exactly.
But I believe everybody that goes to John of God is benefited. Okay. You see the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that, too, in my interviews with people. There were certainly people who were down there... And they had been healed, and they were just coming back for a little tune-up. There were other people who still had cancer present, but they said that their emotional lives had changed so much because their fear
right.
was gone. And they said
right.
that was worth anything. You know, that was worth a weight in gold.
Right, it was. Well, you know, so many people really don't understand that we're eternal. I mean, we can drop our physical bodies, but because we're eternal, we can't really ever... get away from it all. I mean, it's not an option just to check out and stay checked out. So, a larger perspective, a spiritual perspective, is often what will occur when people embark on the spiritual journey. And that alone is probably why we incarnate. It probably is to help us with these understandings and with these these spiritual graduations that we go through where we do drop fear because there's just really nothing to be afraid of if you understand what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can you be afraid of death if you know that you have eternal life? You can't. You can be afraid of suffering right before you die, but death itself is welcome. So.
I certainly interviewed some people with those beliefs, for sure.
So let's start, let's talk a little bit more about when you have cancer and what we know in the body, the conditions in the body that make cancer grow the quickest and what you can do pretty easily to so that these things don't happen, the cancer doesn't get out of control.
Well, like I said, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm, of course, never giving medical advice, but from my research into, published clinical studies and everything, and I'm sure you've seen this too, Susan, is that the idea of a state of inflammation in the body is coming up more and more as something that's very fertile ground for cancer cells. So when a cell becomes cancerous, it breathes not with oxygen but with sugar, so it consumes a lot of sugar. And it takes, it multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. So it's kind of making everything kind of stuck and swollen, and things aren't flowing the way they should. And when you have inflamed tissue to begin with, and everything is already sort of hot and bothered and not cool and flowing like it should, you're kind of creating conditions under which cancer cells can really thrive. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think inflammation is common. It not only is with cancer, but as a precursor of cancer.
Right. Well, and that's what the studies are showing. They're showing that inflammation in the body is a precursor not only to cancer, but to diabetes and heart disease and a whole host of other chronic conditions.
And that's one of the researchers in your book suggested that intracellular infections, and even it's been suggested by other doctors that fungal infections or viral infections are there. But what I'm thinking is that probably the energy lowers in the organ, and then you get secondary fungus, viruses, intracellular infections that further lower the energy of the organ. And so whether they're causes or just co-effects is yet to be discovered.
Exactly, and that comes up with sugar too. You know, everyone's like, "Oh, well, does eating too much sugar cause cancer?" We don't have any evidence of that. But what we do know is that once cancer cells are present, they consume up to 50 times more sugar than a normal cell. And so, once you do have cancer in your body, reducing the amount of refined sugars that you eat is probably recommended in order to reduce inflammation, but also to reduce the food that cancer cells are consuming at a very high rate.
I have an interesting story about sugar. I had a patient who had metastatic breast cancer, and she was with our clinic for about 8 or 9 years. She was very common in that she wanted to see her children graduate from college. You know, she had these goals that she had. So, and then she got to the end of all the goals, and then one day she brought donuts into the clinic. And I said, well, she's going to go out. And she did fairly quickly then. But here she'd been on a strict diet, no sugar, you know, your live food diet. And, you know, she'd gotten to all her goals, and then boom, comes the sugar. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
It is interesting. And I wonder if the alternative healers that I've met, if they would say it was the sugar as much as it was the ending of goals. Because
it's both, you know. Or either, depending on the individual. But yeah.
Right.
Talk about goals. That's very interesting, isn't it?
It is. You know, that was another surprising finding for me, this strong reasons for living, which is one of the 9 key factors in my book. You know, I wasn't expecting that to come up as often as it did, but it came up in every interview. And from a healer perspective, you know, obviously I interviewed people who their strong reasons for living were their children or wanting to stay around for their spouse or wanting to achieve, you know, some career goal that they were in the middle of achieving. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy to understand that from the patient perspective. But what I found most fascinating was this traditional Chinese medicine practitioner that I interviewed in China, in Shanghai, and he said that when he sees cancer patients, what he feels in their pulse, because in Chinese medicine you feel the pulse in order to figure out where the energy is blocked or lacking in the body or too much.
Right.
And he said, from a Chinese medicine perspective, the you know where the cancer is, there's a vacuum of energy. There's the qi is going up and out of the body too much. So the person is not grounded, not grounded to, I guess, I don't know how to explain it in traditional Chinese medicine terms, but he just said that his whole practice is not just doing the acupuncture and the herbs, but teaching people Tai Chi so that they can bring the Qi back into their bodies. And
right.
I think that relates to goals, too. He said when people have something that they're working on and that they're excited about, you're pulling life force into your body just with that excitement. And when that purpose and excitement goes away, then the Qi can kind of, you know, evaporate out of you. There's nothing pulling it like a magnet, not pulling it towards your what they call your dantian, the center energetics right by your belly button. And so that's an interesting way to see goals turned into an actual energetic pattern. So the woman that you mentioned with the donuts, you know, after she'd met all her goals, I just have this visual of her energy sort of leaving her dantian, leaving her center,
mm-hmm. right.
and not grounding her in her body anymore.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the idea that this practitioner who probably sees energy, seeing it leaving right. leaving the body through the area of the cancer, does fit in with the portal idea, because the shamans tell me these entities are feeding off of the energy of the person. So that energy would be going back into the through the portal into the other dimension.
Interesting.
You see, it would fit in.
Right.
And
so many explanations for disease and healing, but it's fascinating. You know, all the cultures. I went to 10 different countries and sort of got 10 different explanations. But when you look at it, the heart of it was always the same. You know, so some people, yeah, I'd never heard the word portal, but, you know, some people were saying chi, other people were saying prana, you know, other people were saying chakra fields. But regardless mm-hmm. of the semantics, the idea seemed to be that cancer was a blockage, illness was a blockage in something that was mm-hmm. supposed to be this beautiful, flowing, breathing system. And of course, when, you know, that's what a tumor is, right? It's a big kind of build up, a roadblock, you could say,
right.
of cells.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the whole thing that started my quest was spontaneous remission. And I'm talking about the kind of spontaneous remission where the energy goes through the body and then the person has no cancer. I studied with a meditation group for 5 months. I quit my job and studied like with this group and did nothing else but fast, do spiritual practices, and work with this group. One of the women in this group had been 36 years old. She had metastatic cancer throughout her body. She was sitting in an Atlanta hospital ready to go into surgery the next day because one of the tumors had perforated her bowel, and so she was getting peritonitis. And she had the energy, start at the crown, go to her feet in the hospital room, but, you know, nobody else was in there. And when she woke up, she was hungry, or after this happened, she was hungry. And she noticed all the metastatic disease was gone. And so she asked her doctor to come to her room and showed him everything. And he took her hand and said, "My dear, you've had a miracle, and we won't be going into surgery." So you see, my journey started by meeting these people.
Wow.
And other people.
Wow.
Okay. So that does exist. And she was a student like myself. There were seven of us, and one was a teacher, but there were six of us were students. And that was my spiritual awakening. And I guess my spiritual education, because I was to investigate spiritual medicine, which is multidimensional by definition.
And so that experience allowed you to take your medical training, which you had already had, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a plastic surgeon. It was in 1990.
Right. So to take that medical training and then have it be sort of transformed with this spiritual experience must have been really powerful for you.
Yeah, and it also, you know, opened up my intuition, my guidance. And when I told you, I was actually preparing a lecture for the Georgia Cancer Coalition on alternative cancer treatments. And
wow.
When I was doing that, I kept hearing, science is looking in the wrong direction. You know, like you don't need to go down to cells and genetics. The cause of cancer is the other way.
Mm-hmm.
it was a pretty specific information.
Wow.
And then I ran into two shamans that were curing cancer right and left and could tell me, like, if they looked remotely at one of my patients, they could tell me every single place that the cancer was in the patient. And then, of course, the PET scan coming in verified it. So, you know, they're real. If they can do that, they can definitely track cancer. And they just told me what they were doing. It wasn't hard. You close the portal. It's pretty simple.
Well, I'm hopeful that, because, you know, I've spoken to a lot of energy healers and acupuncturists, chakra healers and everything through my research. And I kind of feel like we're at this point in science where we must have been right before the microscope was developed. Because I know that before the microscope was developed, was invented, there were people who were writing papers about germ theory. And everybody...
They hadn't seen them, though.
Yeah, they hadn't seen them, but these scientists were ostracized because they were, you know, they were laughed at. They said, what do you mean there's something invisible in our water making us sick?
Well,
when we get the microscope, we can actually see these, you know, these viruses swimming around. And I think when it comes to energy, I was just going to say quickly, when it comes to energy, I hope that we are really close to finding out, to developing the technology that will allow us to see the chakras and see the energy flow between a shaman and a cancer patient. Because if we could put on, you know, Google glasses that allowed us to see what these shamans see, I think science and medicine would just completely transform.
Yeah, and chakras are actually like, they're not in the physical body. They're more in the etheric body, but they extend out into the higher level bodies, you know, into the mental etheric template on out, and then they eventually become multidimensional. So, you know, they're the processing, I guess, the transformers of this energy, the spiritual energy that's coming in from the fifth. If all the chakras are operating properly, then we do get our daily bread, or I call it our daily bread, but it's the energy that God gives us every day to function. And basically, if everything's in working order, that's fine. But the clairvoyants say that there's always a blockage in the chakra that is associated with the organ that has cancer, 100% of the time, those people who can see these things. So the question is, you know, what happens first? You know, what is the chakra blockage, an effect of the cancer, or is it the cause of the cancer? You know, it's you start thinking what is it that is really going on? And it will be extremely exciting for researchers such as yourself to have a whole other thing to look at. And we really need to move this into multidimensional understanding. I mean, all of science we do, but particularly with cancer, because we do not have the cures of cancer that we need. We just simply don't. I mean, there are radical remissions, but it is a full-time job for most of these people doing the radical remissions. And unfortunately, most people who are working to earn a living to pay their bills can't do two jobs. You know, many people can't quit their job in order to do this full-time thing that they're doing to create the radical remission.
It's true.
And that's what I find, you know, in my patients. They go, I can't do it. You know, I'm a single mother. I have no social support system, you know.
Right. Yeah. It is a full-time job. The reason I don't call the phenomenon that I study spontaneous remission, even though there are a few cases where it does happen very quickly, like the case you mentioned, Susan, the word spontaneous by definition means without cause. It just happened by chance. And so I don't use that word because the people that I studied, as you said, they worked very hard to have their remissions.
Yeah.
You know, many of them often worked for 1 to 2 years. I mean, these weren't happening, for the most part, overnight, although, of course, you know, that does happen occasionally. The average length of remission was 1.5 years, and so they were doing these nine factors full-time for a year and a half.
And it's time-consuming. It is time-consuming. Any one of them is time-consuming.
Exactly.
So I think you're right. I think we have a long way to go with cancer, and cancer is still, you know, growing in incidence and prevalence and worldwide, and there are many causes for that. I mean, probably the pollution and the electromagnetic radiation, even use of cell phones. We have the danger is still there in a great deal of instances. And I would recommend your book for anybody who lives on the planet, because knowing what is in this book is helpful for prevention of cancer as well.
Right. You know, obviously I can't prove that. This is qualitative research, but what's interesting is that all of the nine factors have been studied by other researchers, you know, separately, mm-hmm. independently.
Yeah.
And they've all been shown to either directly or indirectly strengthen the immune system. And so
right.
that's where I feel comfortable saying, yeah, these things could be used for prevention because they help the immune system. And,
right.
and any amount that you can help your immune system stay strong is going to be a good idea.
And people, the listeners out there, you can tell how your immune system's doing because of your energy level. If you miss sleep for a couple of nights, like I just did, or if you were in surgery for 14 hours yesterday, like I was when I'm almost 60, I woke up this morning without a lot of energy. I know my immune system's down this morning. And I was reminded when I woke up that I shouldn't be doing that. You see? I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm working way too many hours, and that is really what eventually leads to decreased energy and decreased immunity.
Mm-hmm.
Simple things
and
like
your
overworking,
body,
not sleeping enough.
Right, right. And your inner voice knew that. Your inner voice said, I
woke
good.
Up this morning, and I got a lecture. I really did.
Mm.
So, anyway. Well, would you like to give your contact information for our listening audience?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, the website is drkellyturner.com, so drkellyturner.com. And then, of course, these days it is kind of fun, actually, to be on social media and hear from people who are reading the book or mm-hmm. using these principles in their cancer journeys. So I'm also Dr. Kelly Turner on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So I'd love to hear from people. And if you have your own radical remission story to report, and I think many of your patients might, Susan.
They might, yeah.
I've started the Radical Remission Project, which is at radicalremission.com, and that's because these cases aren't being tracked. I'm sure that woman at that Atlanta hospital who healed right before her surgery, her case was probably never published in a medical journal, and that's because it takes a doctor 40 hours of unpaid time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so
right.
there's no easy way to track these cases at the mm-hmm. moment, and that's why I've created this website to try to fix that. But you can submit a radical remission story in 10 minutes. So that's
Great.
At radicalremission.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure, and I hope you can get some rest.
I'm going to plan to this afternoon. This is Dr. Great. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Dr. Kelly Turner. Her great book, Radical Remission, The 9 Key Factors That Can Make a Real Difference, Surviving Cancer at All Odds, not just good for people who have cancer, people who want to prevent cancer. The principles in these books are very, very solid. Next week, we will be interviewing, Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your Mind, Diane Collins. And then Patty Conklin is in 2 weeks, God Within, The Day God's Train Stopped. Also, join us for Noetic Science this Thursday at the Dunwoody office. We will be having Kathy Burroughs, medical intuitive and clairvoyant, here to talk about developing your own intuition. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.